Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. East St. Louis's Jackie Joyner-Kersee holds one of the elite spots on the national sports stage. She is now working hard to improve young people's health. We'll talk to her about that in just a little while. But first, children and gun violence as a public health issue. The Newtown Massacre has been seared in our collective memory. Gun violence involving teens in St. Louis, especially teens of color, is among the highest in the country. 8 children a day lose their lives to gun violence across the country. Imagine being a youngster who survived or witnessed gun attacks. It moves beyond the gun issue because there are often health consequences. That's what we're talking about on today's program. With me in studio, Dr. Saeed Kajasta, a psychiatrist and Network Associate Medical Director of Behavioral Medicine at SSM Healthcare. Dr. David Jaffe is Dana Brown Professor of Pediatrics and Director of the Division of Pediatric Emergency Medicine at the Washington University School of Medicine. He's Medical Director of Emergency Services at St. Louis Children's Hospital. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
I'll ask the same question of each of you, beginning with you, Dr. Jaffe. What is your work telling us about guns, violence, kids, and the consequences?
Well, I start with the fact that I'm a pediatrician and I work in the emergency department at St. Louis Children's Hospital, and I see in my practice children who are shot. We see about 75 on average children a year who are shot, and that's averages out to more than one a week. It's not uncommon in our work to be treating these children, and it caused me to think in more depth about what's going on in our country and what the problem is. And so when I looked into it, I found the statistics that, some of which you mentioned in your opening statement, that more than 8 children a day or 3,000 a year in our country are killed. That's twice as many as die of cancer, 5 times as many as die of heart disease, and 20 times as many as die of infections. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that tells us that we have a public health issue, that this is a problem that the health community needs to take a look at and to see what we can do to reduce the injuries that occur to children due to firearms.
Dr. Ejesti, what are you seeing?
Well, in assessing mental health status of our teenagers, children and teenagers, you often come across kids who are disturbed and they have thoughts of self-harm or harming others. Some of these kids are the ones who have been victims themselves of violence, bullying especially at schools or in the environment that they're living. Some of these kids, especially those who have access to guns or they have guns at home, parents own guns, they have had thoughts of actually using the gun, either on themselves or actually taking that and taking a so-called revenge on other kids and protecting themselves. That is very sobering. We did not used to see this 2 decades ago. It's been an issue that we see that more and more the last 2 or 3 decades.
You're citing things that I think most of us don't think is typical. I think when we think of violence, gun violence in kids, we think of drug shootings in the street, drive-by, and that sort of thing. You're saying it's much broader than that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you may see, obviously, gun violence in certain areas of urban areas that we see related to drugs and crimes and so on and so forth. But now this is, as Dr. Jaffe very correctly said that, it's a public health issue that we are seeing. It is proven that being a kid, a teenager, or even an adult with mental health issues makes you more prone to become either a victim of gun violence or become a perpetrator. This is something new for us, and I don't think that we all as a society are ready or have been prepared to deal with this issue in our health organizations. As a psychiatrist, most of us don't get training about this. I am not quite sure even American Psychiatric Association has a confirmed position about gun violence. You do see that with American Psychological Association, that there are certain recommendations they are making. I'm aware that American Association of Pediatrics, where Dr. Jaffe comes from, they do have recommendations. But we're not sure that mental health professionals have a confirmed position about this.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned guns in the home, and I'll just point out that the figure I have is that in the state of Missouri there are 35,000 homes that have guns. But I also want to point out, or in the state of Missouri, right, I also want to point out that this is not a discussion about gun control. That's an entirely different thing.
And we agree. We are here really to deal with the issue of the public health.
Exactly.
A public health crisis.
If we get into that other area, it's an entirely different program together, which we'll do at some other time.
And we are not expert in that by any means.
I get that. Dr. Jaffe, let's peel the onion a little bit on the issue of public health. I understand when we talk about mental health issues, but it goes beyond that, I guess.
Well, yes, and the way I think about it is that if there is, and I'll be mindful of your admonition about gun control, but if we think about things that are dangerous in society, so think about cigarettes, think about automobile crashes. These are things where we compare, or we have to work with the rights of individuals and the rights of concerns for public health. So we've come through research to understand that appropriate regulation is good for the public health. So, for example, when I was a child, you couldn't go anywhere without having cigarette smoke in your environment, right? Mm-hmm. And today we've decided for the good of public health, because research has shown that secondhand smoke causes cancer, causes lung disease, makes asthma worse, all these things, bad for children, bad for everyone, that there's a public health interest in regulating where people can smoke. We're not saying you can't smoke, but we're saying that there's a public health interest that balances the right to smoke. The same is true with automobiles. By the way, almost as many people die in gunfire, firearm injuries as automobiles. 31,000 Americans die every year from gun injuries. About 32,000 die in automobile crashes. And we have markedly reduced the amount of death per mile in automobile crashes through regulation. We register cars. We require that people take tests and learn to drive. We require that cars have certain safety features. We require that roads have certain safety features. And all of these things together, taking a public health look at that problem, have allowed us to reduce those fatalities. So when I think about guns, I think about the contrast.
But guns are regulated.
Well, but not in any much the same way. We don't even keep track of guns. Guns are not required to be registered. One-third of gun sales occur without any background checks being required through gun shows and other things like that. So compared to these other examples that I talked about, the regulations are remarkably minimal.
Okay. Did you want to finish a thought? I'm sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, that's fine.
Doctor, from your perspective, it seems to me that the only way that you can realistically deal with the health issue the mental health issue that you would be confronted with is after the fact. Not much can be done before, or?
Well, at this time, I think our position is that it is an issue of after the fact. But I think the society is waking up to this public health problem. I'll give you a couple of examples. Pediatricians have been surveyed, and pediatricians, when they ask them, do you routinely ask parents if they own guns or not, they do not. 78% of them believe that they need to do that. But they always think that, majority thought that, those patients really do not belong to their practice. Surprisingly, when they survey those parents who come to those pediatricians, 30% of them actually express that they do own guns. And out of that 30%, 25% of them acknowledge that the guns are loaded and unlocked. Now, considering this fact that there is an assumption on behalf of healthcare providers, myself being included in that we do not screen regularly for gun ownership in our assessment of the kids through their parents, is a major issue. If we do a better job by asking questions, then we can come up with trends and then convey the trends and the result of the surveys and research to our public policymakers and ask for help from them. How can we come up with a better proactive way of handling the gun violence in the United States?
Who would be asking those questions and when?
Well, I think, you know, it falls on all of us healthcare providers, but there's a big if there. Now, access to mental health is fairly deficient in the United States, despite the fact that we are the wealthiest country in the world. The size of the healthcare in the United States being the biggest, one of the biggest industries, considering that, there's not sufficient reimbursement for access of the most needy, the neediest sector of the community, the ones who are indigent, they don't have insurance, or if they have insurance, it's the state Medicaid insurance, to reach out and receive health care is very minimal. These folks who are providing service to Medicaid population, they get roughly 30 cents on a dollar for the service that they're providing. And as a result, there's no financial incentive for them to get involved. Some of them are not even being paid by state Medicaid. LCSWs, LPCs are not paid sufficiently. Psychiatrists are being paid 30 cents on a dollar. Unless we deal with these issues and remove the stigma and then ask questions and come up with data and turn the data to the public policymakers, we're not going to succeed.
Well, I want to thank you for opening up the healthcare issue as well. Just something else to chew on during our limited time here. But obviously, I understand what you're saying. We have to take a break. We'll do that now. My guests in studio are Dr. Saeed Khajasteh, a psychiatrist and Network Associate Medical Director of Behavioral Medicine at SSM Healthcare. Dr. David Jaffe is with us. He's a professor of pediatrics and director of the Division of Pediatric Emergency Medicine at Washington University School of Medicine and medical director of emergency services at St. Louis Children's Hospital. We're talking about gun violence in children as a health issue. Not as a gun issue necessarily per se, but the health consequences of gun violence in our society today. Back to continue the conversation, if you want to get into it, we'd like to have your take on gun violence and the health consequences. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. We'll take an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet if you like at STL on air. Back in just a moment, this is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll continue our conversation on gun violence and the health consequences amongst children in particular. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Residents of eastern Missouri and southern Illinois are on weather alert today. Forecasters say severe storms could move across the region this afternoon and evening. Meanwhile, crews are cleaning up damage from a morning storm in central St. Louis County that included an EF1 tornado with winds of up to 110 miles an hour. No one was hurt, but about 100 homes were damaged. Missouri Democratic Representative Rory Ellinger, who is ill with liver cancer, will see one of his legislative priorities signed into law today by Governor Jay Nixon. The bill signing will take place in the legislator's hometown of University City. State lawmakers unanimously passed a bill that prevents nursing mothers from being penalized for breastfeeding in public. And the National Archives will lend to the Missouri History Museum the actual document that made what is now Missouri part of the United States. The Treaty for the Louisiana Purchase of 1803 will be on display this fall as part of an exhibit called The Louisiana Purchase, Making St. Louis, Remaking America. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Dr. Saeed Khajasteh and Dr. David Jaffe on gun violence, the health consequences, especially for children. Dr. Jaffe, back to you. I'm a little intrigued and not sure that I fully understand this notion of dealing with this problem when it seems to be that it has to be dealt with after the fact. What can be done before the fact? Do you have any ideas?
Yes, this is a great question, and it does go to the policy that that Saeed was referring to of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And, you know, the Academy policy says, and the first statement is that that the most effective preventive measure is to remove guns from the home and the environment. Now, that right now is a personal choice, and as Saeed mentioned, pediatricians can certainly discuss this issue with families. About a third of families across the country have guns in the home, and mention that this is the policy of the Academy, that the safest thing to do is to not have a gun in your home. However, recognizing that many families, in fact, will choose to keep the gun in the home, the next thing is to talk about safe storage and safety measures on the guns. There are data to show that that pediatricians who counsel families on safe storage actually get results, and that they can improve the rates of safe storage in the homes. And there are, again, data to show, I think Saeed mentioned this, that that in a study they found that 25% of gun owners now keep their guns loaded, and 40% keep them unlocked. And so so there's a lot of opportunity there to make things safer in the homes of children where there are guns. And this is an issue not only for accidental shootings, which occur among very tragically among young children, but also for suicide, which is a major issue. And Saeed may want to comment about that. But suicides nationally account for 2/3 of the gun deaths. So to your question about is this just about inner city drug violence, it's really not. In children, suicide is about 1/3 of the gun deaths.
These percentages hold up with regard to what you see in the emergency room?
Yes, we do see the accidental shootings. I'm trying to think about suicides. We do see occasional children who have done that, but many of those, unfortunately, are dead on the scene, and they don't make it to our emergency department. And then, of course, the homicide, both intentional and accidental. We see children who are sort of incidental victims. They're innocent bystanders, and they may be on the scene where an intended target of a shooting happens to also shoot the child.
This, Doctor, is something that I think many people can grasp a little more easily than some of the other aspects of this problem, that being witnesses who witness an act of violence. The consequences of that, psychological, we talked about mental health. PTSD is something that comes up in the conversation all the time with regard to this sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Trauma, unfortunately, is a very common psychiatric problem that we see amongst our child adolescent population. Obviously, gun violence being a very horrendous one, if they have been witnessing that, or if they have witnessed or have heard about it, or even have seen that on the media. I do remember that after the Newtown tragedy in 2012, a lot of kids that I was treating in my practice, we received multiple calls from the parents that they didn't know how to handle the concern of their youngsters. They were scared about going back to school. They were asking, Mom, Dad, am I going to be killed if I go back to school? You know, that was a major issue. We had to face that, and we were not ready. We had to advise. Some of us actually had to come up with our own answers because there was no really training on how to deal with these issues.
Yeah, there's a secondhand aspect to this, and that is watching some of these things on television. I mean, there's no shortage of coverage when something like Newtown happens, and you can certainly understand how kids would be impacted by that.
There's no doubt that there's a direct association between watching violence on the media, hearing about it, and the rate of increase in either suicide and homicide amongst teenagers with gun. That has been established with research over the last two decades, 1990s and 2000s. We are aware that there are two spikes of suicide in the United States among certain age groups, the age group of 14 to 19, and then above 65. In 1990s, we were successful in dealing with the spike amongst the teenagers by prescribing medication, diagnosing depression, and so on and so forth. Somehow we lost that edge.
What about video games?
Absolutely. It is a new phenomena. We know it that again the research supports the fact that watching violent video games has a direct relationship with thinking about suicide or homicide with gun amongst the teenagers or those who go to school. It is quite possible some of the tragedies that we have seen within the past 2 or 3 years in Newtown, Aurora, Arizona might have been the result of or a direct relationship or indirect relationship with watching these video games.
Dr. Jaffe.
Yeah, I'd like to weigh in on this a little bit as well, because I think that both the American Academy of Pediatrics policy and there was a recent Institute of Medicine report that was released June of last year, both of which called for the need for more research. And one of the topics that they pointed out was the need for more research on the whole aspect of media and violence and how it affects the behavior of children, both in terms of their psychological response to it, also in terms of their behavior. Mm-hmm. So there's a big need for research. And if I might add one other thing, research in this area has actually been underfunded by intention, because there have been some restrictions placed legislatively on both the CDC and the NIH regarding research in this area. And so the Institute of Medicine report points this out and says that we really need better data. So a lot of the data that we have is incomplete and fragmentary. The good news is that we're starting to see a little bit more funding in that area.
Well, video games is big business, and I'm sure that they have some well-paid lobbyists stalking Capitol Hill to attend to some of these matters. Before you go to the phones, let me bring up something else that happened just this week, and I thought you might want to weigh in. In South Roxana, Illinois, there was an incident, an April Fool's prank, in which apparently some students called in and said that there was a gun in the school, there was a threat of some sort. So there was a resulting lockdown and investigation, and the kids, many of them were literally freaking out. They were on their cell phones calling home, screaming and crying and all the rest of it. This kind of plays in, and I'll take this to you, Dr. Kajaste, with regard to the mental health aspect of this. These kids are going to – I'm sure some of them are still dealing with the anxiety they felt.
I think not only the kids but all of us, the adults, all of us who have heard about the last few mass shootings that have happened in Arizona, Aurora, Newtown, are all sensitized, are all traumatized, and we have to deal with this issue. Our kids do not have the psychological makeup and maturity to deal with these things very easily. They're the ones who really need the support, the counseling, the reassurance. And, we still don't have a regular policy about these things.
Mm-hmm. And we have to ask ourselves, what does this mean about our society? Mm-hmm. That we have now regular concern in schools about shootings in schools, about mass events in schools. This is a bigger problem in the United States than in most of the other economically developed countries, in fact, all of the other economically developed countries. And it has to do with the wide prevalence of guns in the environment. So.
Let's take a couple of calls. Unless, Doctor, you have something to add to what was just said, we'll go to the phones.
Well, one other thing I would like to mention is that, as Dr. Jaffe said it very correctly, if there is a toxic product in the society or is being introduced to society, we all seek regulation. And I'm very surprised that we do not have any regulation for video games in the United States on how they are entering the market. But I'm not even pointing finger at that industry. I am asking that instead of pointing finger at certain entities, we ask them to become part of the solution. We ask them to actually seek assistance from experts to help them provide better products that are less dangerous to the society and to the kids.
All right. Before I go to the phones, let me just, before I forget or time runs out, tell our audience that our guests will be participating in a panel discussion next Wednesday at a forum on strategies for protecting children from gun violence. It's sponsored by Women's Voices Raised for Social Justice and Vision for Children at Risk. That's on April 9th from 8:30 to noon at UMSL's JCPenney Conference Center. We'll have more information on that on our website at sdlpublicradio.org. Now, to the telephones. Let's start with Jason calling from Clayton. Jason, go ahead.
Hi, Don. Good morning. Maybe I'm just a Second Amendment fan, but why do I feel like this is a gun grab? And not to get off the mark, but regulation of video games, I mean, they're rated like movies. Parents can control what video games your children buy or play. I think it's a little silly for me to envision taking my child in for a cold, and now I'm getting questions about whether or not I own a gun. And is this a mandate somehow that's associated with the Affordable Care Act? And who do you plan on sharing that information with as you collect it? And how is that held in confidence, specifically when the parent is not the patient?
All right,
and
Jason.
It only begins, you know, a litany of other questions that are off the mark that are probably intrusive.
Jason, thanks for the call. Dr. Jaffe?
So thanks very much for the question. One of the things that pediatricians do very well is preventive medicine, and we're encouraged and in fact instructed to ask about all sorts of preventive issues, and our academy is suggesting to us in this policy that I've quoted that raising awareness of parents about guns in the environment, about safe storage, about guns in the environment of the neighborhoods is actually something that can be done to prevent injuries in those children, and it goes along with all sorts of things we talked about, plug protectors and keeping your poisons locked up, and are your toys safe for children, and it's along those lines that we talk about it. And it's unfortunate that in some states there have been attempts to actually prevent pediatricians from having these conversations.
Clearly you want more regulation on guns and less access to them. He characterized it as a gun grab.
No, I'm trying to be very careful about drawing the analogy between a right to own and the right of the public to be safe and to have these appropriate regulation. And I think that there's a large space in the middle where we could probably agree that that Second Amendment rights can be protected and still public health issues can be addressed.
Okay, back to the phones. Jay in Normandy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, gentlemen. Two things. Number one, I can't believe that the military now is at the exchanges selling guns. I just am shocked given the incidents that they've had. So I wanted to just mention that. And I'm curious what the doctors think. You know, this gun nullification bill, this terrible bill that's going through the legislature in Missouri, has a provision in it, I believe, besides nullifying federal law, but has a provision of about open carry, which is just a return to the Wild West of Dodge City 1780 or something like that, or 1880, I should say. What's your opinion about that bill? And possibly seeing people lugging guns in open carry. I just can't imagine they're going to do this, but I'd be curious of what the docs say. Thanks.
Go ahead, Doctor.
I'm going to just answer that question with one series of statistics. Amongst the 50 states in the United States, Alaska has the highest rate of gun violence towards children, 8.1 per 100,000, and Missouri is number 6 with 5.1. I think the legislature in Missouri needs to be informed of what the data is available and why are we the 6th state in the nation with respect to the highest rate of gun violence towards children. I think they need to have this kind of information before they make any piece of legislature and enforce it. I think lack of information, or if there is information, lack of access to the information has made a difference in the policies that we have made. As Dr. Jaffe said it very correctly, I think there is a big space between protection of Second Amendment, which we all respect, as well as public safety. And I think entities such as legislatures, such as gun advocacy entities and protection of Second Amendment have to come in with the rest of us to have this kind of concern about child safety and become part of the solution. We don't want to point finger at anybody. I highly respect personally myself gun ownership in this country, and I have to inform you, I am a gun owner myself. But at the same time, I do have concerns about what I see on a daily basis in my practice with the kids.
We have an email here, which comes at it somewhat differently. This is from John in St. Louis County saying, what are your guests' opinions on requiring children to receive firearm safety training, much like they are required to have classes in sex ed? Dr. Jaffe?
Yeah, that's that's a really interesting question. And again, the data on the effects of firearm safety training are relatively scanty. However, there have been a few studies that show, for example, there was a study where they put children in an environment with a real looking gun, but it was obviously unloaded, and the children found the gun and shot at each other at a rate of about 30 to 40%, and most of those children had this kind of training. So so I think one of the concerns about it is the training. The evidence is that the training doesn't overcome the impulsivity of children when they come to a situation with a loaded gun. So I'd be concerned that people believe that they take this training and then that their children are somehow gun-proof. I think training is a good thing, and I have no objection to it. But I think we need to be careful about what the meaning of it is.
Let's try another call. This one from Fenton. Aaron joins us. Go ahead, Aaron.
Hi. I actually used to work with Dr. Codesta a couple of years ago, and I wanted to say that he is an amazing psychiatrist. I wanted to thank him for the work that he does working with the population that he does, because I'm actually a therapist now, and he's absolutely correct that there's not a lot of financial draw to the field. Therapists and social workers make so little money. I can understand why people who would normally be really good at this job don't do it, because they need to take care of their families and find a higher paying one.
Well, thank you for a comment. Thank you for remembering me, actually. And I'm so happy that, you know, you have taken a position with this one. But as we talked about it previously, we really have to make access to mental health as easy as possible, same way that we have access to food, shelter, and everything else. And community supports that. The nation supports that. We have to have access to mental health as well. You know, this is a country that, you know, has the highest GDP and the best healthcare industry in the world, and it would be a shame if we cannot provide sufficient mental health care to our citizens.
There's one other sidebar to this that we had talked about off the air that is interesting and should be mentioned, and that is the drills and the training that kids are getting in school now to protect themselves from active shooters. And this is something, Dr. Jaffe, I know, and I'm sure Dr. Just you too, think there's a problem here.
Well, it goes back to one of the thoughts I shared a little earlier, and that is that I think it's a commentary on our society that we now have to have drills in schools to protect our children from potential shooters. This is not what is appropriate for the educational environments of our children. I understand why they're doing them, and people need to be prepared, but by golly, it's sad that we have to have that.
Let me add something to that. One of the things that we are missing in our schools is problem resolution, to teach how our kids can actually resolve their problems peacefully and create empathy amongst our kids. We're not doing a very good job. Even in our best public or private schools in St. Louis area, I have noted that we are very deficient in this regard.
We're going to have to stop it right there. I'll remind our audience once again that you gentlemen are part of a panel that is going to be held next week, April 9th from 8:30 to noon at UMSL's JCPenney Conference Center. It's a forum on strategies for protecting children from gun violence, sponsored by Women's Voices Raised for Social Justice and Vision for Children at Risk. Drs. Jaffe and Kujasta, thank you so much for being with us. We'll get together again soon, I hope, to find out that this problem is less so than it is right now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. Coming up, we'll be talking about another health issue for children with Jackie Joyner-Kersee. Stay with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.